This episode is brought to you by Essentia. A better you starts with better hydration. Essentia is on a mission to inspire people to do what matters most. Their proprietary ionization process transforms water from any source into ionized alkaline water, providing water that's 99.9% pure with a pH of 9.5 or higher. Essentia overachieving H2O, the number one ionized alkaline water. Shop now.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Alec Mappa Hot Mess with Matthew Dempsey, psychotherapist. I'm Alec Mappa. I'm an actor, comedian. I live in Hollywood, and nobody knows I'm gay.
That's true. The biggest kept secret in Hollywood. I'm Matthew Dempsey. I'm a multicultural counselor and psychotherapist, and everybody knows I'm gay.
You certainly are. You look very sunny and like you've been laying out.
I've been enjoying post-COVID, going out and laying out by a pool and getting some sun.
Yeah, at a big time Hollywood hotel. We don't have to say which one.
It's not.
Unless, because I want to protect your privacy. I don't Dick, or Harry coming up to
you. It's just a pool in town and the sun is beautiful and it's been very nice. Yeah.
And any movie stars, anybody famous, anybody?
It's just people in town. It's chill.
Famous people at the Standard all the time. I would see famous people. This is my funny famous person story. I was at I was at a press junket at the Four Seasons Hotel in Beverly Hills.
Uh-huh.
And LL Cool J was across the pool.
LL.
And I was with my friend and we just ignored him. We just did not look at him. And then he started scowling at us. And the scowl was, why aren't you looking? You know I'm famous.
Having a Mean Girls moment with LL.
Yeah, and the more he did it, the more we ignored him. It was hilarious. I was like, you're rich.
Perfect.
You don't need to be that needy. So you seem very up. Your presenting is quite cheerful today.
I am. I do feel cheerful.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I mean, I think, laying out, getting some sun feels good. But also I think, kind of post-COVID stuff, I can feel, as we're able to kind of re-socialize and get out there, I feel some of the heaviness starting to lift a bit.
Yeah.
And so it's been nice to just kind of feel like a bit of levity after the last year and a half.
I'm going on a plane tomorrow for the very first time to Utah, and I'm terrified because I've been watching nothing but TikTok videos of people having breakdowns on planes. And so I thought
maybe you were terrified of Utah. I thought it was a Mormon thing. Maybe.
Well, that too. I mean, that goes without saying. Since you're so liberated and out of the closet, let's talk about that.
Out of the closet. Perfect little segue.
Yeah, how's that? That was like silk off a spool.
Love it.
We have an amazing guest today, a really talented actor who's so funny.
Yes.
And he's the girl of the moment right now because he is everywhere.
Yes, and he's a very good friend of mine.
Yeah, we have Johnny Sibley on the show. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Johnny
Sibley. I always thought it was Johnny Silly Billy, but it's not. So he's going to be
all of the above.
He's going to be with us today.
What are we talking about, Alex?
We are talking about anal beads, the pros and cons. This is me sober, by the way. I haven't had any alcohol in 30 days.
I love it. Yes.
Oh God, this is my fake cocktail.
I hear it with the ice. Okay, so I'll help bridge. Then we're going to be talking about after you come out, but because when you come out. I remember thinking that, you come out, that's kind of it. You did all the hard work to get to a place where you can acknowledge you're gay and then you can put yourself out in the world. And then you're in this kind of pink cloud of gaydom, right? And you just kind of throw yourself out there and you think yes, okay, good. Now we're good. No more shame. I can live my life. And you think you can kind of hit your stride. And what you don't realize is there's this whole process that comes after the fact where you have to learn all this shit that you didn't know before.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like it when you live your authentic life. I mean, that's why the show is called A Hot Mess, because it's kind of like the minute you decide to be authentic, the minute you decide to be vulnerable and open, it's kind of life is going to throw every challenge at you. And being queer is a big one. I mean, I was just I had to deal with stuff I didn't even know I had.
Yeah. Well, you know what? There's two things I think that happen. One is that there's a bit of this delayed development because you're coming out. There's a lot of people that come out at all different different times. I came out when I was 17. So it really kind of everything that all of my kind of like straight counterparts in like middle school and high school, they got to deal with then probably like in early teenage years, I was dealing with almost like a decade later. So there's this kind of delayed development and having to just learn all of those things about how to date and you know, just kind of be myself.
I just want to throw this last part.
Okay. The other part is also then having to process just what it means to be living out, you know, kind of like a gay or queer person and, and that marginalized identity and shame. So, yeah.
And then the third part.
All the parts.
Crabs. Have you ever had crabs?
I have had some things, but crabs has not been one of them.
You don't want that to happen to you. I have one word for you, Provincetown. So
you just threw anybody who was about to come out of the closet way back in the back.
Hey, listen, forewarned is forearmed. So no, you said earlier about our counterparts in high school, and I'm starting to wonder, I think the difference is between us and them and our straight peers in high school is they come out and they come of age, they become sexual in a way that's socially acceptable.
Yes.
Every ad, every television show, every romantic comedy kind of affirms who they're becoming and what they are.
Yeah, it affirms who they are. So that's the plus side of it. I think kind of the downside of it is that there's this really kind of narrow scope of what is acceptable of how you do that and kind of what it means and what relationships look like. And then you kind of just get trapped in this kind of one note of how to be a human being. So even though I think there's this kind of, you know, kind of grave downside to being kind of oppressed and marginalized in a way that you can't even be yourself, I think the fact that it challenges us to have to dig really fucking deep and figure out exactly who we are, not just automatically kind of fitting into some, you know, kind of one note thing, but finding out exactly who we are and then coming out and getting to explore the kind of broad range of that. It's a slippery slope and it gets messy, but I think that there's so much fucking beauty in that because it opens us up in such a different way that I think a lot of straight people don't have the opportunity. What? You're going to talk about somebody's hole, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. Your stretch receptors, which we've referred to on this show.
Yes, we love stretch receptors.
It opens you up to a whole world of experiences.
Yes, and to fill you up with love.
It gets sloppy sometimes.
It gets real sloppy.
It gets real sloppy. How do you and Johnny know each other before we bring him on our final program?
Oh my God. Okay. Johnny and I met years ago. We met through just kind of a few mutual friends in town.
Did you do
it? And we just went and we like went to a brunch. And it's so funny. And I've said this to him before too, is that I couldn't tell you one fucking thing we talked about at that brunch. I couldn't tell you one thing that Johnny and I actually like said to each other. Mm-hmm. But it makes me think of Maya Angelou as a quote. And she says, people will never remember what you did. They'll never remember what you said, but they'll always remember how
they made you feel.
And what I remember was Johnny's heart. Johnny was the sweetest person you'll ever meet. And also I think that's, you know, a lot of people are sweet in this town, right? Yeah, because people are very kind and, you know, kind of putting on like, you know, pleasantries and stuff. What you see is what you get with Johnny. He's like a legit good person. He actually cares about all people. Oh, he's just like a huge sweetheart.
Sounds like a nightmare.
He's killing it for all of us.
Did you guys do it? Did you?
No. Nothing ever. No. Believe it or not.
I thought you were going to say, you'll never forget how they made you feel
inside.
And then he peed on me. I'm in the mood today. I don't know why. Listen, don't go away. We have, if this is your first time in the program, come back. It's we talk about mental health. We destigmatize, use your words, mental health. And we love that you're here listening to us. If you're a first time listener, don't forget to download and subscribe. And when we come back, we'll be here with the Meryl Streep of the internet, Johnny Sibley.
This episode is brought to you by the Weather Channel. What does the Weather Channel app share in common with a personal trainer and a life coach? It's an ally on your quest to wellness. What you do with its insight is up to you. Like running an extra mile when air quality is good, or checking your allergy forecast so not even ragweed can disrupt your chi. It's more than a weather app. What in the weather are you waiting for? Be a force of nature with the Weather Channel app.
We are very, very excited to welcome our guest today, especially because he's a very good friend of mine. But beyond that, he's an actor and a content creator. You've seen him most recently on the hit show Hacks as our favorite water cop on HBO Max.
Yes, he made, speaking of water cops, he made waves. How's that for a segue? With his role as Costas Perez on FX's groundbreaking show, Pose. And you can also watch him as a host on Logo TV. He is all over the internet 24/7. Please welcome the fantastic, hilarious Johnny Cibilly.
Yay! Johnny.
Hi, everyone. Hey, how are you?
Thanks. I already love your voice. Can we exchange phone numbers after this so you can just give me an obscene phone call when I'm feeling down?
Johnny, don't.
Absolutely. You know what's so funny? When I was in high school, I used to call my friends and leave them dirty messages like, hey, what's up? And they were like, some guy called me. And I was like, because we used to prank call. Like that, we would get together on Friday nights and like just prank call everyone.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
That, now we only get crank calls from Lady Bunny. She calls and leaves messages like, fuck you, faggot. You know, stuff like that. It's hilarious.
Iconic, really.
Welcome to the show. Welcome to the show. Well, Matthew is still in the closet. And so he needs your expertise.
What is it like on the other side?
Yeah. How do you navigate the waters once you come out?
Oh, gosh. What do they say on the internet? Take your time. No time is the wrong time. You know, it's so funny because I hear all these like regurgitated, like it gets better. And like I was telling, I always tell friends, like it does get better, but it also gets different. Mm. So like while you have this weight lifted off your shoulders, you also have a new pile of bricks thrown on you that you have to like sort through and figure out what's good for you and what you're going to, you know, work with. So I don't know. It's just, I wish somebody would have told me when I came out, like, have some grace with yourself to just get it wrong and then get it right and then keep getting it wrong and then keep getting it right. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause that's lifelong.
Yeah, it is lifelong. So in a nutshell, I know a little bit of the story, but for everybody else, like, what was it like for you coming out?
It was like a little bit of a journey because I like tried to come out, but I like tried to do it in a way that wasn't, you know, I was like, oh, the kids at school are calling me gay. So I guess they're right. My mom's like, no one can tell you you're something that you're not. And I'm like, damn it. Okay. So I like what I retreated back and I got my heart broken by a boy in high school, you know, heartbroken. And that was really just had like, I didn't care about anything anymore. So I was like, you know what? I'm in love with a boy. And that's just what it is. Like it gave me the strength to just be like, say, that's who I am. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, and it was still met with some pushback, which, you know, I also always tell people that, you know, your coming out is not only a journey for you, but it's a journey for literally everyone around you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you have to make sure that you're confident and comfortable in your authenticity, but to also understand that it's going to take a moment for everyone to find where you are, because it took you a minute to find where you are as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah. We've talked about that on here before too, about how, you know, like I remember when I came out and, you know, you have all this time to, or what, however long it takes you to get to a place where you're ready to come out and ready to just kind of live that, you know, truth. And then you just kind of think like everybody should be there with you, right? Your family, your parents, your friends, like, okay, I'm gay, let's do this, right? Like I was the only one who had an issue, right? Like I'm okay. And everybody's like, okay, but like, you know, we love and support you, but like, give us a second to kind of couch up too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? It's like finding out that you're a godless sodomite is relatively new to the rest of us. So you gotta give us a chance to digest. No, but I think that by the time you get to the point where you're nervy enough and you have enough self-knowledge to come out and have the bravery to do that, let's not underestimate how, you know, the bravery it takes to do that, especially if you have religious parents.
Yes.
And, you know, you are kind of in this militant place.
Yeah.
And I think, my generation, certainly back in the Jurassic era, we weren't talking about what Johnny's talking about, which is acknowledging everybody's journey around you. Now, Johnny, where did you grow up and what were your parents like?
I grew up kind of all around the world. No, my parents were in the army. My parents were in the army, so we lived in a bunch of different states.
And, oh, like, you're an army brat.
Yeah. But I mostly grew up in Miami. So it was like, you know, a bustling metropolis of mm-hmm. like, you know, fun Hispanic people. But I don't know. For some reason, it always felt like a little small town. I mean, we grew up in the suburbs. My parents were divorced when I was age 7. So my mom kind of took the reins. And like, for me growing up, my mom was like everything, you know, yeah. I was her good boy. And my dad was like, he left us. Like, you know, I would like hear what my mom would say to like her yep. sisters and things and internalize that, you know, as a lot of divorced kids do. But my dad is a great guy. Like he just, you know, he wasn't there to defend himself. So, yep. and you know, as years have gone on, their roles have kind of shifted and my mom and me are the ones that kind of butt heads. But I also think it's because we were so close and because we mean so much to each other. Yes. But I will say that we have our knockdown drag out fights, but it, you know, especially when it comes to like queer stuff and, you know, but she always comes around after she's heard what I've said, after the, you know, stuff has died down and comes back and said, I actually heard what you said. So mm-hmm. like in the moment, I'm like, she doesn't hear me or see me. And then afterward, I was like, oh, wow, she does get it after the, you know, the knockdown drag outs. And then, like, it's so funny because I always try and like, see the other person's point of view, you know, and even within like the queer community, I always try and do that. Like when new people come out and they don't get it right. Or when people say stuff, even to this day, I was somewhere recently and a guy was like, I'm not really into femme guys. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
Hold on a sec. Yeah. I'm going to take it and I'm not going to judge it. I'm just going to meet him where he is. And
yeah. No fats, femmes are Asians.
Right. And it's just like, still say like, you know, because yeah. I surround myself with yeah. people that don't talk like that and don't, mm-hmm. but I also am one of those people that hears something like that and won't immediately cast someone out because that's coming from something they've learned and it's a behavior that can be undone. So like, you know, a lot of people don't have the time for that and that's great, yeah. but I'm always like, ooh, a project.
You know? Wait, let me just say this too, Johnny, because like one of the things that I've always loved about you the most is that in a community where, you know, we're like, we're a wounded lot, right? So we've got all of our own shit. It's very easy for
people, hurt people.
So it's easy for us to project that out and just kind of like cut people down or be nasty sure. or just generally be unforgiving.
Yeah.
You have always been so patient and kind with everybody. Like, I mean, all the people. And it's just yeah. it's just so nice to see that. And the amount of kind of like your own stuff, your own self-love to get to a place where you can do that for everybody, I think is incredible.
Yeah. I mean, there was one time I hooked up with this guy and like, after we had sex and like fluids were exchanged, like all this stuff, he was getting dressed and he said to me, you know, you would be perfect if you just went to the gym.
Oh, and, what?
I know. And it stayed with me, but it knocked me down so hard.
I'm so stuck. Do you see my face is frozen in a rictus yeah. of just disgust and shock. And
I was very upset. And I was like, this is why these people. And then, you know,
it was Matthew, wasn't it? Matthew said it.
It was famously. You hear it here first. Mm-hmm. No, but I thought to myself, I'm like, you know what? There's something that he's gone through or he's experienced that led him to believe I wasn't enough. And so he probably doesn't feel enough even within his own body.
Right.
So he felt like he needed to express that to me. So instead of getting upset at the person, I got more upset at this idea, you know, especially as gay men, like we already have so much to deal with.
Yeah.
So much trauma that we bring into, you know, the gay world.
Yes.
And then I could have lashed out and I could have, you know, dragged his ass on the internet because, you know, that's the thing to do. Like I even mentioned it recently. Someone's like, what's his name? I was like, honestly, don't remember. But, you know,
what did you say to him?
I didn't say anything.
You didn't say anything?
He didn't say before he pushed him out a window. He didn't say a word. Wait, listen to this. You guys, did you, because this was all over the internet this weekend. Did you see how Tabitha Brown responded to Wendy Williams?
No.
This is exactly what Johnny's talking about.
What?
So Wendy Williams, Tabitha Brown, who you love, Matthew.
She's great.
We all love the vegan chef. She's now on a Showtime series called The Chi. She's financially solvent enough to retire her husband. Her husband worked as a police officer for years and years and years and supported her for 15 years when they were broke while she came to LA to be an actress. And she said, if I'm ever in a position to have you retire, I'll do it.
Yep.
So she did it and she announced it. Wendy Williams went on the air and said, this is a terrible idea. I was with one of those guys. You know, I support you, honey. I support you. And all of a sudden the money's gone and blah, blah, blah. It's a disaster. This is a terrible idea. Tabitha Brown responded the very next day. And the very first thing she says was, Wendy, first of all, I watched. God bless you.
Yeah.
And she said, I thought the amount of pain this woman must be in to be triggered by somebody else's happiness.
Yeah.
And it was, and she goes, I pray that you find the kind of love that I have. Ooh. And that I love my husband so much that I don't want him to risk his life, to put his life in danger. He wants to mentor children and I want to support that. And we've been together, blah, blah, blah. But there was nothing hateful about, but it made it worse.
But she still read her.
Yeah, down, but she like, read her without nicest, with the nicest thing. And it was just and then it was she ended with this. I pray that you find a love. Mm-hmm. Yes. Genuine. I pray that somebody sees you. And you it was can, just like you could. I just imagine the Indiana Jones Nazi face just melting like if as Wendy Williams.
Yeah. But you know what? You can because you can always tell when somebody is saying something to try and read you, to try and cut you down, even if it kind of sounds like it's supposed to be nice. But the thing about Tabitha that resonates with everybody is that her sincerity is just like oozing. She's incredible. Mm-hmm. And also because the grace that she was able to show Wendy and Johnny that you were able to show, you know, person X in your bedroom is just that comes from such kind of a deep knowing of this is not about me. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm not acting out defensively, then I maintain that core belief within myself that I am fine. This is an expression of somebody else's shit. They're hurting. And just to kind of give that grace is also really in service of our own self.
Well, it's one of the four agreements, right? Don't take anything personally. I mean, it's kind of like that guy saying to you.
Yeah.
You'd be perfect if you went to the gym. I know. How could you not?
Yeah.
But it took me a minute to just be like, oh, that's her stuff. And I wonder how many times he's had sex with someone and said, you have to work on your arms or you have to do this or you have to, you know. And I was just like, and that's the thing. Like, I feel like as queer people, it's so easy to repeat the cycle of cutting others down.
Yeah.
But I felt like for so long, and I still feel a lot of times that I have to prove who I am as a queer person within the queer space. And, and I really don't, you know, and I want to say that, you know, even if people come out at 45, they have that 45 years of shit that they have to now contend with. When a lot of us, like you said, you came out at 17, I came out at, you know, 17, 18, 14,
five different ages. I came out at 17, so many times 18, 14, 12, 9, 6, 3, 2.5.
Well, I was like, I'm gay. No. Okay. Now I'm gay. No.
Yes.
You know?
Johnny, you said you grew up in Miami. That were your formative gay years in Miami?
A good amount of them, but I feel like the ones that I grew the most was when I moved to New York and I really hit because Miami, although it's like a big city, it's full of very like-minded people. Yeah. A lot of like Hispanic culture is very similar. Whereas New York, it has everybody. So like New York was the first place that I met trans women and really got, you know, my ass beat in that sense of like learning to be with other within our own community, because that's another thing. Like I meet gay men who have been out forever and I talk to them about trans women. They're like, I don't get that. I'm like, are we not there yet? But again, you have to offer people grace and also information because that, you know, knowledge is power, you know, as they say.
That was the same for me. It was through my 20s in New York was really where I came up and I tripped all over the fucking place and had to learn all the things. And it was in, I think it was like 2007. I did my first internship and it was at the LGBT center. And so there was, you know, then it was just kind of like the broad spectrum of the community. Whereas before I was just kind of like kicking it with just gay guys. Yeah. So now here I am with everybody. And I was, you know, starting to then real, like I didn't even know when I first stepped in who was trans and who wasn't. And then I was like, oh, he's trans. Oh, she's trans. And like immediately thought everybody was trans and just kind of like started. And that's where I just got so much of my kind of own schooling and education on stuff. But before kind of all that, I didn't fucking know. Yeah. I was making all kinds of messes.
New York is a great place to get things wrong when you're first coming. I mean, because it's really like, it's true. I mean, that's where my peak time being a sex and love addict was in New York City. And it was in New York City that I realized that I didn't see my value as a queer person beyond sex. I didn't see my value because I was with one nightmare after the other going, why is this bad? Why isn't he calling back? It's because I realized I didn't know how to be alone. I didn't know how to treat myself. I didn't know how to love and respect myself as a queer person. I think that is the thing post coming out that you have to work on forever.
Johnny, what is it? What's for you, right? Like, as we're talking about post coming out, right? Like, you kind of did all that work to get there, and then you kind of think you're okay, and then you start tripping up and making certain mistakes. Is there anything that stands out for you as kind of like some of the biggest learning moments?
Oh, for sure. I mean, even I would say even this year, I am more sex positive than I've ever been.
Ooh. And one,
because you know the world is, and then because you know even when you come out, you know you're surrounded by a lot of very sex positive men, but sometimes you can be in relationships with people that tell you that this is slutty, this is wrong.
Yes.
You could, you know, go to your steam rooms and your things and feel shame right after, because that is what we're taught. And that is like the go-to gay dilemma of like, we seek these spaces and places that feel wrong because that's what that was our first introduction to a lot of sexual situations. Hmm. Whereas now I feel like, if I want to cruise, I'm going to go cruise. First of all, cruising is back. You know, not that she ever went away, but I feel like in-person cruising is back.
Is it?
Oh, thank God.
Oh, honey, yes.
Wait, can you like map out exactly where to go?
Yeah. So you're not looking at a phone anymore. You're kind of like, you're talking to somebody's ear in person.
The other day, and a guy pulled up next to me and he said, do you want a blowjob? I said,
what?
Not right now. Because I was walking the dog. But I did take.
I said
number.
Please. By the way, I said please. And you were very short with me. I sensed a little bit of attitude. Hurt people.
But just that, like, I'm 33 years old, and like I came out, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12.
Right.
But like it's taken me this long to be able to self-teach myself to say, no, that's not wrong, Johnny. You're taking on trauma that you have or shame from the past. And it's not wrong if you want to hook up with this guy midday after walking that, you know what I mean? And that's something that even today, and what's exciting to me is that like, all I know is that I don't know enough, you know? Yeah. And that's, you know, because I feel like we live in a world that says, if you don't know it all, that you're not worthy, where it's like, I would love to flip it. And it's like, if you don't know enough, you are worthy. Like there's always opportunity.
There's so much humility in that. I mean, it's that the Buddhist thing of you have to be teachable.
Yep.
You know, if you walk around going, you do know everything, there's a rigidity and totally. Arrogance about that.
Yeah.
I remember
when I was, you know, in like my mid 20s and, you know, and I kind of thought the whole thing of I'm out of the closet. I'm fine. I have no shame. Right. I'm just like living my life and all these other problems is everybody else's problems. And I was in therapy and that was when my therapist introduced me to the book that of course, like all of us gays know, hopefully The Velvet Rage. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first time The Velvet Rage by Alan Downs. And he talks about shame. It's kind of like post coming out shame, right? Sorting through that shit. That's maybe like not as apparent and just started realizing how much shame that there was there and how much I felt like I wasn't enough and how much I felt like I was lacking and how much I would kind of push that onto other people to be like, to do that work for me and to be there for me and all that stuff. And really only kind of sorting through some of that stuff and understanding that, then I could challenge my own thinking on that and also honor the fact that after you come out, there's still this ongoing practice of making sure that you can love yourself.
That book made me understand myself and our community in ways that it just radicalized my thinking. because all of that book is about, we concentrate as queer people, especially as gay men, on the external so much, how we look, how much we're achieving, what we're wearing, our Instagram, where we're traveling, kind of, you know, like you said earlier, Johnny, the words, being your mom's good boy.
Yeah.
You know, that we all have that. We all grow up with this kind of like, okay, I'm queer. I remember when I first came out to my mom and she was crying and I consoled her. The words that came out of my mouth was, I'm still a good boy.
Yeah.
I'm still a good boy. And the thing is, like with Velvet Rage, is like, we are trying to project that we're good. My body's big enough. My house is big enough. And all of that stems from this place of shame of like, and the thing about shame, that kind of shame coming out, because we're talking about the post coming out thing, is you can't get away from it. It will, it will rear its head in any kind.
Multitude
of ways.
It shows up in so many different ways that you don't, and you don't even realize that it has anything to do with being gay. Like you don't even realize that it stems from that place, but it fucks with you.
I was on vacation recently and I was talking to, I was with like a small group of friends and one of them was a straight woman. And I don't remember exactly what we were talking about, but I remember expressing it in a way that felt like, you know, because this is how it is. And she said, no, I want you to acknowledge that it's not like that for everyone. It's like that for gay men specifically. I have never felt that. So don't minimize how you feel and what you've gone through because you feel that that's how everyone has dealt with it. It's still important for you to honor it. And I was like, first of all, ally.
You're just like broke down crying.
Yeah, truly. It like, I very, very rarely these days have like those like moments where I'm like, because I was like, wow, she really held space for me. And, you know, and I feel like post coming out, that's something that not only we need to do for ourselves, but do for each other of like, this is your space to not only, you know, it's hard because the internet exists and the internet is not forgiving, you know, or it feels like it's not
making people smarter. I feel like it's making, you know, there's so much information available to us that people don't, it's like, when people ask me stupid questions, I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to fucking spoon feed you this. Just Google it.
No, I think it is helpful though, actually. I think, and not to go off on a tangent on this, but I think social media and the internet is neutral. And I think what people do with it and how they choose to utilize it is up to them, because that's just like the world. I mean, there's shit and then there's all the good stuff. So you have to seek it out. But I think, like, hallelujah that the internet exists so we can be just even way more evolved as a community as we are than ever before. I didn't even know YouTube when I was coming out. You know, I had to go in AOL chat rooms and just talk to random people to ask them how I know I'm gay. You say, who do you think about when you jerk off? And I would say, guys. They're like, I got some news for you. I'm like, no.
Oh, no.
That was it. You know, there's so much more information available now.
Johnny, you were on Pose, and it's so funny because, like, Sandra Bernhard and I are friends, and we were alive. And during that era, like that's when I came out. And it was an era when gay men and lesbians had friendships like across the board because the lesbians showed up for us when everybody else abandoned us. But I love how you said you had that teaching moment of this isn't your specific experience. And I love that. I was sitting next to this woman at a HRC dinner, a human rights campaign dinner in Cleveland, big dyke. And and she was like, I'm not out at work. And I was like, is your boss headless? What's his deal? And then she said, my boss is very homophobic and probably knows that I'm a dyke, but if I could, there's no legislation that protects me currently in Ohio if I come out. And I said the thing, why don't you move? You know, why don't you move to a more queer friend? She goes, why should I? And this is, I'll never forget it because this speaks to me when you said, this was your experience. This is my experience. It's two different things. Because in my head, I'm going, go to San Francisco, you know? He said, my family's here. My lover lives here. If we all move, if queer people all move from where they're not welcome, nothing will ever change.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I was just kind of like, it was one of that, you know, I was like, oh, I was like, I felt like so superficial. And I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to offend you. She's like, shut up, faggot. We were fine.
Yeah, it's so true because, you know, we all seek refuge, you know, and some of us don't realize that if you arm yourselves, there are people like you in these smaller towns and mm-hmm. these rural, more rural areas. It's just a matter of finding those people and banding together. And, you know, a lot of us don't, you know, we see on the internet, we're like, oh, LA's popping, New York's popping, San Francisco's popping. So we're like, I'll just go there, cut to the chase. You know, also a lot of queer people are very ambitious and want to prove to the world that we're worthy. So we seek bigger opportunities. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, but it's so great to normalize the idea that like small town can be queer too. And that's
they're
so
everywhere. Yeah. We're everywhere. We are everywhere. Speaking of the internet, I referred to you as the Meryl Streep of the internet because during the pandemic, all of a sudden, In every feed, you had a video where you had a wig on, or you were doing a character and you were so funny. And then, what was the genesis of that? How did you? And when did you feel like, oh, it's caught on? People are watching.
By the way, Johnny's been doing this for years, long before the pandemic. She's really? Been chasing around. With
that's when I caught on to it. I don't get out much.
Love it.
That actually came from a place of, one. Not having the opportunities, like, you know, as an actor, you get invited in to read for certain roles mm-hmm. and certain roles don't feel like your wheelhouse. You're like, I can be funny. I can be mm-hmm. super femme. And like, you know, and I'm tired of getting called in for a sexy guy with a sprinkler, like, you mm-hmm. know, which is fine. It feels nice and validating to get called in for those things, but that's not. And then I was in an acting class once and my acting coach was like, we did like an exercise where I was like, a very like sassy Latina character. And he's like, why don't you put that on the internet instead mm-hmm. of all these mask for mask selfies that you put up? And I was like, okay, rude. Like, you know, my first inclination was to be like, excuse me. And then I took his advice and I said, you know, it's true. What I want to see on the internet, what I enjoy exploring on the internet is funny videos mm-hmm. and people just living in their joy. And that's where it really came from. And like, I'd just been doing it and then it caught on, you know, especially it was at a time when a lot of gay men weren't making fun of themselves. Like we, you know, we do in our safe spaces, but I'm like on the internet, why aren't we like publicly. There's meme accounts all over now where like, you know, we're just dragging each other down the street. And I think it's so great because it keeps us, you know, malleable and like not taking ourselves too seriously. Mm-hmm. And you know, this above all, like, comedy really does help with, you know, all the stuff that we go through mm-hmm. in this community. Mm-hmm. So it was always like a safe haven, not only as an artist, but like as a queer man to just explore and express.
Yeah.
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 So
I'm so in love with him right now. We're going to run
taking
away.
A moment to swoon.
Yeah. I'm just like between the two of you. I'm being spit roasted right now in my head. I'm gonna rename the show Spit Roasted with Alec Mappa, Matthew.
Well,
Dempsey,
speaking of being the sexy guy called into with a sprinkler, how about being that water cop on Hacks, huh?
You're having the best time ever.
It's so great. I mean, it's I will say, and I have no shade to anyone that I've ever worked with before Hacks, but like it's very rare that you work with a group of people that just make you want to be better all the time. Mm-hmm.
First of all, Jean Smart. I mean,
and a woman that comes into the room with that resume and talks to everyone as though it's her first day on any set ever, you know, is just a real special thing. And like being able to just watch her work is, you know, like I was telling someone recently, I was like in a scene with her and I'm like watching her act and I'm like, oh wait, I'm in this scene. Like you forget. And you know,
I love that though. I mean, I think that when you're with somebody who's that good to make you forget is like a magical place to be because then real stuff's coming out of you. But that cast, Hannah Einbinder, Meg Stalter, who was also an Instagram comic.
Hi, gay.
Hi, gay.
So funny. You're working with Cole Escola as one of the executive producers.
Yeah.
My baby's nephew, Mark Indelicato, who I worked with in Ugly Betty when he was a baby. It's so much fun. How did you come about that? Did they call you in?
It's so funny. I was like helping a friend do something on a Sunday and my manager's like, hey, these people for this new Gene Smart show were asking your availability for the next 2 months. I was like, why are they, am I auditioning? Like, what do you mean? And he's like, no, they just want to know if you're available. I was like, okay. So like that night I put like a scene on tape. And like, you know, like sometimes you wait a month, 2 months to hear like, no.
yeah.
But like, it took a day and a half and they came back and they're like, yeah, you start on Wednesday.
Oh,
and
I was
like,
oh,
whoa.
I was like, did someone drop out? You know, like the self-saboteur in my head is like, well, I'm just replacing someone. And it wasn't the case. Apparently they were looking for Wilson for a while and they couldn't, you know, find someone. Mm-hmm. And then they found me. But it was so nice. And like, what's so nice also about playing the character and just like the queer characters on the show is that Carl said this recently. It's not the queerness of the character isn't the plot point. Like yeah. None of us are, mm-hmm. you know, that's not the dilemma that we're going through. Yeah. We're going through dilemmas that are, you know, just like everyone else, you know, and not that queer dilemmas are not important, but we see that so often that, you know, our queerness or transness or gayness is the plot point for queer characters. And for this show, it feels like we're just part of the uh-huh. ecosystem of everyone. And it feels so good to be a part of.
Yeah, yeah, well, you've like acted with some pretty heavy hitters. I mean, you and Billy Porter.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. Pose. I mean, I've known Billy forever and he's the best. And you held your own. What was that experience like?
Well, it's so funny. I walked into the room and I remember getting the call, like, this is an audition to play Billy Porter's boyfriend. I was like, oh, honey. Like, I was just, look, I still get goosebumps. Because, you know, coming up in New York, you knew who Billy Porter yeah. was. Like, you just know who the people are. And, you know, just getting that opportunity to work with him. He was like, he walked in the room. And, you know, if you know Billy, you just know. He's like, well, good thing you're attractive because I had no say. And I was like... But just in those moments, like when you're in the makeup and you're in those scenes and like all of that, like that stuff goes away because yeah. it's just two people. And he's so generous, very much like Gene Smart in that, like, you know, when you're doing it for a while, you know what the other actor needs, like at the end of the day, when you do these roles and these things successfully. So I feel so grateful and blessed to just be in the vicinity of these folks. Mm-hmm. But then to like share screen time, it feels like, it really does feel like a dream come true. And these specific roles, you know, I haven't had many, many roles, but these, if I, you know, my stepdad called me after Pose. He's like, you could die tomorrow and be happy that.
Thank
and
you.
I was like, okay, probably don't, but yeah. But he was right. I feel so proud of these folks that I've been able to, you know, be a part of their work too.
Yeah. And it's just, they yeah. teach you, it's acting yeah. school. You're up against really, really great people, yeah. if you're smart, you'll watch them and go, okay, I'm stealing that. That's
well, for, yeah. Yeah. for Hacks, the creators, I told them, I was like, you know, when I lived in New York, I was, they were the writers behind Broad City. And I was like, you know, I was a background extra on Broad City. And I remember just like watching all of you and you're very much the same in this space, you know, and like, here we are full circle. I'm like actually on the show that you're doing.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. And also the fact that like you're in a place in your life where you're having all of these incredible opportunities that you wouldn't be able to even have, or even to be able to step into those spaces for those opportunities, if you weren't able to kind of like go through all the mess that you had to go through, right? Like mm-hmm. to be able to come out, to be yeah. able to actually even call out your own internalized homophobia, like, right? The way that we kind of bring that shame in and that can fuck with us and we make all the messes, but being able to unpack that, being able to get to a place yeah. where we can actualize like all the things that we want to, but coming from an authentic space because we're not scared of that anymore, because right. we realize that never was bad or dirty or wrong.
Yeah. That's and when you can bring all of yourself into the room, all yeah. of yourself into the room. You know, Billy, we're coming to the end of our stellar program here.
Did you say Billy? Did you just call him Billy?
No, I was saying Billy was saying this thing to me and I'd like to share it with you. A bit of wisdom. Because okay. we talk about a lot on this show about compare and despair. Yes. And especially with the internet. And Billy said, I said, how did things change for you? And he goes, there was an internal change within me paraphrasing here. He said, where I had to come up with my own category for who I was. And that I was the top of that category. As the best Billy Porter there could ever possibly be. And that I was a leading Black gay man as Billy Porter. And I think that's what Johnny's doing. I think that's what you do, Matthew, in your practice. It's like we are so much stronger as our authentic selves.
Yes.
You know, as opposed to coming, because I've done this, come into the room and second guess myself and try to be what they want.
Yep.
You're already lost.
So,
Johnny, Sibylle, we always end our fine, stellar program with a hot message from our guests. So if there's somebody who's going through a difficult, messy coming out process right now, what would your message be to them?
I would say try not to go into the negative of both what people are saying about how fast you're doing it or how good you're doing it, and just really try and stay curious. Give yourself some grace. Don't feel the need to speak out on things that you don't know about quite yet. You know, just take the time to to enjoy the view. No, but really just take your time. Offer yourself some grace and realize it's a journey, not a destination.
Yeah, I love that.
That's beautiful. Where can we find you on your socials, Johnny Sibylle?
It's at my name, at Johnny Sibylle. Also, Silly Billy is very much what I've been called ever since I was a kid. I've always said that if I open a production studio, it's going to be called Silly Billy Productions.
So
But yeah, my name, Johnny Sibylle, at Twitter, Instagram, all of them.
All the things.
Well, wow.
You can't miss them.
What a treat to have you on the show. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Johnny. I love you.
It's great. Love you both.
I'm going to look for you while I'm walking the dog.
Thank you, Johnny.
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Matthew, he's terrific. I think
Isn't he?
Have more of your friends on the program. I know. All the time.
Well, no, I think I brought two on, and that's all I got.
Really? Who else did you bring on? You brought on Johnny
Kaylin Allen.
Kaylin. Oh,
yeah, we love Kaylin.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah, two winners.
Two winners.
Winner, chicken dinner.
Yep.
What is your hot message?
My hot message. My hot message would be go out there and, you know, make mistakes, and that's okay. And know that when you're making mistakes, acknowledge them as mistakes, and know that you're not a mistake because of it. Those are two very different things. So learn from them. What are you laughing at?
You may make mistakes. That doesn't mean you are mistaken.
No. We make mistakes. We are not the mistake. The difference between guilt and shame.
Stupid. That's how I do it.
Alec, what's your hot message?
I'm an idiot.
Let's land this plane. Come on.
What's my hot message? You know, just what Johnny said. It's kind of like, it was so great to talk to you, by the way. I think that it just be gentle with yourself and be teachable. You're not going to know everything all at once. And I think that to kind of go through life with, what's more important than knowledge to me is curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
I think curiosity is more important than knowledge because you're always willing to learn. You're always teachable. Just keep everything new. Where can people find you besides that pool at that fancy hotel? Where can they find you on your socials, big boy?
At MJ Dempsey Psych, Instagram, Twitter, Matthew J. Dempsey Psychotherapy on Facebook, you know, wherever.
Okay. When we reach 5,000 visit downloads and subscribers, I think we should do this live at some point.
I would love to.
A poolside someplace.
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. You can find me at Alec Mappa on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Thank you so much for tuning in for the Hot Mess
podcast.
We're trying to save the world one hot mess at a time. So tune in next week. We'll have more Hot Mess fun. Bye-bye.
Bye, guys.
This has been a Stage 29 podcast production. The podcast is executive produced by Patty Ciano, Laferne Cusack, and Stephanie Kaysen. Our audio editors are Jackson Ruff and Jonathan DeMatti. Callie Kiltz is the social media producer, and a special thanks to the rest of our podcast crew, Rwani Horinagay, William Cusack, Lisa Clark, Katie Brown, and Morgan Kaler.
This podcast has been produced by Stage 29 Productions for entertainment purposes only. The contents of this podcast does not constitute medical or professional advice, do not reflect the opinions of this company, any of its parent companies, affiliates, subsidiaries, promotional sponsors, or advertising agencies. The views expressed by the hosts and guests are their own, and their appearance on the program does not imply an endorsement of them or any entity they represent. For more information, please go to stage29.tv.